We're on Amachdalad Amud Beis, about the middle of the Amud, about the two dots. The line begins to tiny. We said in the Mishnah that you have the case where a couple has been married for 10 years and they didn't have any children. So we said he's supposed to divorce her or marry another wife because he has to do Puruvu. We discussed, and it's going to come up in today's Gemara as well, is that we force him to get divorced, which is how Rashi learns it, and Rambam and several other Rishonim, or is it that just Beis Din tells him, Tosfos says, that they tell him you need to get divorced, but they don't actually force him to do so. Anyway, we also talked about the various exceptions to that, and nowadays that halacha is not practiced very much. But anyway, the point is, the Gemara is focusing on, the Mishnah had said that if he divorces her, she's allowed to marry somebody else, and the second guy can again be with her 10 years until then. If we see that even after the 10 years, should they not have any children, then the same thing applies. So the Gemara says, Sheni ein shlishi loy. Now the implication of the Mishnah seems to be that she can only do this twice, not three times. If it already happened that she's been married to two husbands, and she didn't have children with either of them, then it sounds like the Mishnah is implying that at that point she can't marry a third one, or at least not a third one who needs to have children, who needs to puruvu, because at this point it sounds like she already has a chazaka of being infertile. Well, masnisin mani Rebbe. So who would our Mishnah be like? It would be specifically according to Rebbe. Namely, as we're going to say, we have a machloikas, and it's again not just over here, but throughout Shas, whenever we talk about something has to happen a certain number of times for there to be a chazakah, is it two times or three times? So our Mishnah seems to be implying that two times is enough. That would be like this. Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Mala b'na harishin from mala harishin rames. If a woman made a bris milah for her first son and he died as a result of the bris milah, sheni umes, and the second one the same thing, shlishi like tomo, then she should not make a bris milah for the third one, divrei Rebbe. That's what Rebbe says. Good morning, Ali. In other words, Rebbe is saying two times is enough already to establish a chazaka that this woman's children, that bris milah, at least as babies, is dangerous to them. And therefore, so the third one already, she should not do a bris milah. As the Gemara is going to express the idea later that there are families in which the blood doesn't clot as well. One possibility is we're talking over here about hemophilia, which is exactly that, where the blood doesn't clot. And there's a certain type of hemophilia that actually runs in, where women are actually carriers of it, but the men are at least some of the children that they have are the ones who suffer from it. And therefore, so that could be what the Gemara is referring to over here. That would explain why we're talking about the children of the same woman. And the Gemara is going to talk about also that by the same token, we're going to talk about the sons of sisters, where you have the same idea. Conceivably, all of those sisters could be carriers of this gene. Anyway, so Rebbe is saying that two times is already enough to establish that chazak. Divrei Rebbe. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a shlishi tomul. Reb Shimon Gamliel says that's not enough evidence yet. The third one, she should still make the bris milah. Only if Rachman al-Aflan, this happened the third time, revi like tomul, then the fourth one already should make a bris milah, because according to him, you need three times to establish a chazaka. So therefore, again, when our Mishnah implies that a woman has, she's married to one husband, 10 years pass, no children. He divorces her, she marries another one, same thing, 10 years. And the Mishnah stops over there, implies, like Rebbe, that two times is already enough to establish a chazaka, that she's infertile, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to say later, only if she can marry only a husband who doesn't need to fulfill Puruvu anymore, who already has the necessary number of children, as we learned in a previous Mishnah. So the Gemara says, V'hotanya ipcha. Now, though, the problem is, we learn a braisa that says the other way around, that has Rebbe saying three times, and Reb Shimon Gamliel saying two times. So now the question becomes, Heiminayu achrinisa. Which one is the later one? Apparently what happened was, at one point, Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel flipped their opinions around. So now the question is, which of these braises is the later one, that we would know from it definitively that this is Rebbe's final opinion and this is Reb Shimon Gamliel's final opinion? Well, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof. It happened with four sisters in the city of Tzipori. Shemala Rishonu Ames, the first one made a bris milah for her son, and he died. Shnio Ames, the second one, the same thing. Shlishis Ames, the third one, the same thing. Revius Both with Nevi Shem Gamliel, the fourth sister, when she had a baby boy, came to Rav Shem Gamliel to ask her what to do. Amala Altamul. So he tells her, don't make a bris milah. So you see from that, that Rav Shem Gamliel told her that only after three times do you have a chazaka, implying that now Rashi points out, given that Rav Yochanan is telling us what happened and Pri Ba'aba is saying it in his name, now Rav Yochanan is at the very end of the period of the Tanoim. For the most part, we consider Rav Yochanan to be an Amora, and the implication is that Rav Yochanan actually saw this happen, because we have Rav Ba'aba telling us this in the name of Rav Yochanan, implying that Rav Yochanan, And you don't have Rabbi Yochanan saying in the name of so-and-so, implying that Rabbi Yochanan saw it himself. Therefore, that would mean that this happened at the very end of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's lifetime, when Rabbi Yochanan would have been fairly young. And then therefore that shows that that was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's final opinion, that three is needed for a chazakah. So only after this happened three times can he say, don't make a bris. The Gemara says, that's not a proof. The Domi asked Yishlishis Nami Hava Amala. New, like this, only the fourth woman, only the fourth sister came to Rav Shimon Gamliel. And then maybe he just didn't know about what's going on before that. Maybe a third sister had come, and then he would have told her the same thing. The Gemara says, Imken Maya Sadrusi, did Rav Chiva Abba. Well, then what's the point of Rav Chiva Abba telling us the story at all? Rav Chiva Abba is not just telling us stories. Is not just telling us stories for no particular reason. He's telling us stories in order to derive halachas from them. Now, there's no question. It's a well-known halacha, and we don't need Rav Chiya Ba'aba to be telling us a story to buttress it. That when there's danger in bris milah, that you don't do a milah. It's a well-known halacha. And it's pretty obvious anyway that Amram phrases it, but after all, you can always do the bris milah later, but you can't bring back a Jewish neshama, a Jewish life. Anyway, the point is that, so if Rav Chiya Ba'aba is telling us the story, there must be some kind of chiddush in it. So if it was just that when there's danger in bris milah, you don't do a bris milah, there's no chiddush in that. It must be that the chiddush is that only the fourth time do we say that there's a danger, meaning that you need three times to establish a chazaka, and therefore that would be. So it's not just that it so happened that this woman came, that only the fourth one came to Rav Shimon Gamliel. The point would be that had the third one come, Rav Chiya Ba'aba is implying, then Rav Shimon Gamliel would have told her, go ahead with the bris milah, because there's not yet a chazaka. It could just be a fluke. So doesn't that show then that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds three times as a chazaka, which would answer our question? So he may have at some earlier point held that two is enough, but then he changed his mind. On the other hand, the Gemara says that's not a solid proof. The Duma Hok Mashmalon Da Choyes Mechazkas. Maybe not. Maybe actually the chiddush of Rav Chiya Ba'aba's story is that it applies for sisters as well. The Braisas, after all, are talking about where you have, it's children of the same woman. And we're saying that once a certain number of them have had a milah and died from it, then you don't do it for the next one. But we wouldn't know from that Braisa that the same thing is true of sisters. Maybe the chiddush of Rav Chiya Ba'aba's story is not the number of sisters, but rather the fact that it was sisters at all, where we otherwise wouldn't know that. So therefore, that doesn't give us a solid proof that Rav Shimon Gamliel ended up holding three. It might be the other way around. Maybe originally he held three and then later on changed his mind to two. Okay. In any case, Omar Rava, so Rava says, Hashta da'amat achoyos machazkas, based on this, that you're saying that sisters have a chazaka, that across sisters you have a chazaka as well, meaning, as we just said, you have a number of sisters where each one of them, after a bris milah, their child died, and was saying that ultimately once you have enough of that two or three times, as the case may be, then you have a chazaka, and the rest of them shouldn't do a bris milah for their children until they're older and stronger. Based on that, that sort of thing would apply to other health issues as well. Lo yisa adam isha, lo mimishpachas nichbin, v'lo mimishpachas mitzeroyin. A man should not marry a wife from a family of people who have epilepsy, or a family of people who have saras. We don't necessarily mean saras over here as in the kind that people get for lashon hara, the kind which is l'mayla miderach hateva. We may be talking, sometimes the Gemara uses saras in a more general sense to mean various kinds of skin diseases. Anyway, the point is that the same idea, in other words, these things tend to run in families. So if this woman has, for example, three sisters if a woman has three sisters or maybe even three siblings, maybe it doesn't even have to adapt for these sisters who have epilepsy or who have tzaras, then be careful about marrying such a woman. And the Gemara says, now that's only if you have a chazaka of three times. Now, as we go through the sugya over here, we're going to see that there are cases where, in fact, we hold like Rebbe and we say two times is enough for a chazaka, and other times where we say three. So the Ritva discusses over here that there can be a difference between, first of all, the Gemara itself is going to say that there's a difference between different halachas, but the Ritva explains the idea behind it. For example, when you have matters involving pikuach nefesh, then you have to be stricter, and then two times is enough to establish a chazaka. Whereas in other areas, so later on we're going to talk about dinim mominus, for example, a different Tosfos is going to say there you need three times. But you have different other things here, for example, where we're not talking about dinim nefashis, where we're not talking about something where there's a danger to life. We're just talking about something a disease like epilepsy or tzaras or whatever, which is bothersome but not fatal. Then therefore you need three times before you're going to say that you shouldn't marry into such a family. So the Gemara says, "My Havi Allah." What's the bottom line then? Do we say that two times is enough for a chazaka, or do you need three times in a case like this? So the Gemara says, "Ki Osir of Yitzchak by Yosef Amar." So when Rav Yitzchak by Yosef came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported, "Uvda Hava Kameder of Yechanan." There happened a case in front of Rabbi Yechanan, meaning the case that was brought to Rabbi Yechanan to pass it on, the Knishta de Ma'in, in the shul of the city of Ma'in, a city in Eretz Yisrael, v'yem ha-kipurim shechalias b'Shabbos, that it happened once that on Yom Kippur, which was also Shabbos, there was a baby who needed a bris milah, but it had previously happened that umol rishoni omes shni omes. This woman had already made bris milahs for two of her sons, and they died, and now she had a third son, shlishis balafonov. And the third one, she came to Rabbi Yechanan now on Shabbos, which is Yom Kippur, to ask whether we should do the bris milah. And he tells her, go do the bris milah. So now the point is, so it's not only a matter of that Rabbi Yechanan is saying that there's no sakana to worry about yet. It still might be that the first two were flukes. It doesn't necessarily have to be that there's yet a chazaka of there being it being dangerous for boys of this family to have a bris milah. Not only that, but Rabbi Yechanan is saying that, keep in mind, that only a bris bismana is doicha Shabbos and is doicha Yom Kippur. Otherwise, it's doing malacha. So Rabbi Yechanan, by saying, on a day like that, go ahead and do the bris milah, is in effect saying that there's absolutely no reason to postpone the bris milah, and no reason to say that it might be also to do it on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, because we don't yet have a chazak. So we see, therefore, that you need three times in that case also for a chazak. So that's what Abaya says to Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef, who reported this. Chazi. So pay attention, realize what you're doing over here. In effect, with your testimony, to Kashoris is sort of a sakanta. You're telling us that there's something which otherwise we would have thought that is usur, and also that involves a danger that we don't have to worry about it until you have three times chazaka, because after all, if there is any danger in this bris milah, not only is there a danger in doing it, but also not only would we say you shouldn't do it because of the danger, because again, like as the Rambam's phrasing, that you can always do the bris milah later, but you can never restore Jewish life, but also it comes out from what you're saying that you're being matir something which otherwise we would have thought is also, because after all, a bris that's not bismana can't be done on Shabbos and can't be done in Yom Kippur. It would be a malacha. Well, based on that, apparently Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef said, yes, I'm absolutely certain that what I said was correct. Based on that, Samachala Abaya, based on that, Abaya relied on that statement of Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef, that even in such cases, you need three times for a chazaka. The Ozol Nasva L'choyma, and he went and married Choyma, that was her name. Now she was Brate de Isi Breder Rabbi Yitzchak Breder Rabbi Yehuda. So she was the daughter of Isi, the son of Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi Yehuda. So she's Rabbi Yehuda's great granddaughter. The Nasva Rachva from Pumbedisa. Now, first Rachva from Pumbedisa had been married to the Schoima, the Shochiv, and then he passed away. Rav Yitzchak Breid Rabbi Baba Chana. Then she was married to Rav Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi Baba Chana, and also the Shochiv, and he also passed away. The Nasva Hu. So now Abaya married to her, taking the view that three times now that we're going to discuss in the next couple of lines the concept of Katlonis, that you have a woman whose husbands have passed away. More than a certain number of times, then we say we consider that there may be a danger in marrying her for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara soon. So again, the same rules of Chazaka would apply. Is two times enough, or do you need three? So Abaya took the view, given that Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef had said the story with Rav Yochanan, implying that only with three times you have a Chazaka, and two times you don't yet, and therefore not only you can do the bris milah for the third baby, but you can even do it on Shabbos, which is also Yom Kippur, even though only a bris, that's supposed, even though only a bris bismana is doicha those. So based on that, Abaye said, okay, so this woman, Choyma, is not yet a katlonis. She only had two husbands die. Therefore, I can go ahead and marry her. The Shochiv, unfortunately, Abaye passed away as well. In fact, there's a story in the Gemara in Ksubas. The Gemara has kind of a sequel to this that tells about what happened after Abaya passed away, where Choyma came to Rabba to arrange for support out of her husband's estate. So we'll get to that in a few months, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, Omar Rabba. So Rabba says, I don't understand how Abaya could do such a thing. How does somebody do a case involving himself like that, put himself in danger like that? Didn't Abaya himself say, Ovin de Samcha, when Ovin, which is really Robin, Rav Shuda Gaon points out in one of his letters that many of the Chachamim, a lot of times when we have among the Chachamim a name that begins with a Resh, it's really short for Reb plus their name, for Rebbe or Rav plus their name. For example, Rava himself is really Reb Abba. So another example is that Rabin, we often have in the Gemara, Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael and reported such and such. And later on, Rabin came and reported such and such. So Rabin is really Reb Ovin. So Abaya says, Ovin de Sampa, Ovin, meaning Rabin, is someone we can trust, is somebody we can rely on. When he tells us something in the name of Rav Yochanan, then we can rely that what he said is completely accurate. But Yitzchak Sumka, but Red Yitzchak, which means that Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef, who we're talking about, we don't know why he's called Red Yitzchak. Maybe he had a red complexion, maybe he had red hair, whatever it is. But he, Lav Bar Samcha, is not necessarily so reliable. Not always when he tells us something in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, is it 100% accurate. And the reason is because Abaya himself said, Ovin Yeshne B'Chazara, Yitzchak Sumka Eine B'Chazara. Ovin has Chazara, it was there at the Chazara, Yitzchak Sumka is not. Which Rashi gives two explanations. One is that Ovin, meaning Rovin, constantly reviews his learning, whereas Rav Yitzchak by Yosef does not. So therefore, we know that we can rely that what Rovin is telling us is accurate. We can't always be sure about Rav Yitzchak by Yosef. Second of all, Rashi gives a second explanation. So the first explanation of Chazara means review, as it usually does. The second meaning of it is that Rabin was always there when Rabbi Yochanan was teaching Torah. So therefore, sometimes it might happen. Rabbi Yochanan might say a din and then change his mind. Because Rabin is always going to be around, therefore he'll know if Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind and know the new version of what Rabbi Yochanan says. Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef is not always there. So sometimes it might happen. Yes, he heard something from Rabbi Yochanan. Yes, he's reporting it accurately. But he doesn't know that Rabbi Yochanan later on changed his mind. So Rava is saying, in retrospect, Abaya knew all that. He knew that you can't always rely on everything Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef says. So how could he rely on him, Dafka in this case, and marry this woman, Choyma, who had already been married two times and whose husband had passed away, and risk his life like that, where in fact it ended up happening that he passed away? So that's one thing Rava says. But oid, and furthermore, you can also point out Amar Depligi the Inyan Mila. Granted, we're saying that Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel argue regarding Mila, whether two or three times is enough to establish a chazaka. V'nisuin Mipligi. Do they argue the same argument as far as marriage, as far as a kaplanis? Maybe not. Maybe in fact, Maybe, in fact, they would agree that two times is enough to establish a chazaka as far as that. The same way, as we're going to point out soon in the Gemara, that there are certain areas in which everybody agrees, even Rebbe, that you need three times for chazaka. Maybe this is one of those examples where vice versa, where Rebbe Shimon Gamliel agrees that even two times is enough for a chazaka. So then the question is even more so on Abaya, how he did this. And the Gemara answers, Ein. As a matter of fact, yes, they do have the same machlokas as far as marriage as well. So at least as far as that, Abaya did have a tana to rely on when he got married to Choyma. What Rava's first criticism of him is still valid, that he shouldn't have taken what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef is saying without investigating it further to make sure that it's actually correct. But in terms of opinions of Tanoim, at least you can't say that Abaya didn't have a basis. He had a basis. Baha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa. Nisus Lurishin Omes, if a woman marries a man and then he dies, Lasheni Vames, and then a second one, same thing, Lashlishi Lachinase Debe Rebbe. Then Rebbe says at this point she's not supposed to marry a third one, because of the same thing. Already you have a chazaka that her husbands are going to die. Divrei Rebbe, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Lashlishi Chinase, Lurvi Lachinase. Reb Shimon Gamliel says she can marry a third, she can't marry a fourth. So we see they have the same machloikas about two or three. Okay, so now let's figure that out. The Gemara says, "Bishlema gabed mila." I understand by mila why we would say that after a certain number, it's been established that mila shouldn't be done for the boys in this family, because ikam mishpacha the rofi gama, because you have some families where the blood flows more easily. The ikka mishpacha the kamit dama, and then you have other families where the blood congeals and clots faster. So again, like we said before, I mean, you have the extreme, you have a disease called hemophilia where the blood doesn't clot at all, or clots only with great difficulty. And then, so the Gemara can be referring to that, but it's not the only one. There are various other kinds of, there's various other kinds of disorders like that. So in general, yes, you can have, such things do tend to run in families. So therefore, we can understand logically why it is that we would say that once a certain number of children from the same woman or a certain number of children from sisters have had this problem, then we would say that you don't do a bris milah anymore. Ellen is suing, and by the way, the post can discuss the question, what about if you have a man has had several children who passed away from this? Let's say he's married to different women, or let's say you have brothers who have the same problem. Do we say that necessarily? So in principle, based on our Gemara, we would say not. We only mention the mother, and we only mention the sisters. Where again, if we were talking about the classic kind of hemophilia, then that one actually is carried by women and transmitted to men. But there are other kinds, so therefore the post can talk about that maybe you do have the same issue when you have multiple children from the same father or from brothers, maybe you have the same issue. Anyway, the point is, so by Mila, we understand the logical basis behind the issue. Ellen is suing my timer. What's the logical basis behind saying that a woman whose husbands have died shouldn't remarry? We're not talking about where we suspect her of killing them or something. So what is there about marrying them that could conceivably cause their deaths? So Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hachi Amar Avimi Mehagrunia Meshmei Derav. So Rav Mordechai tells Rav Ashi that Avimi Mehagrunia Meshmei Derabuna, Mayan Goyim. Because it's very possible that her Mayan, meaning her fountain, which is a way of saying her womb, when her husband has relations with her, Goyim, that causes it. She may have some kind of disease, which then gets transmitted to her husband when they have relations, and then that kills him. So again, if it happens one time, then it's a fluke. If it happens two times, then you have the machloikas. Once it happens three times, then for sure we know that. Then for sure we have reason to think that that might be it. So that's one explanation. But Rav Ashi, I'm a mazel goyim. Rav Ashi gives a different explanation. You don't even need to say that. You could say her mazel causes it. Meaning, how would mazel cause it? So the Rosh explains in one of his chubas that, after all, a woman in general doesn't support herself. Her husband supports her. So it might be that min hashamayim, it's been decreed on her that she shouldn't have support, that she should end up being a poor widow. So therefore, so, 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 uh, so therefore, in fact, The Rosh says, for that reason, it wouldn't apply the other way around. If a husband has multiple wives who pass away, even from the same cause, we wouldn't say that mazel goyim, because after all, his wife's not the one supporting him, but rather the other way around. These halachas are brought in Shulchan Aruch, although, again, there are different exceptions to them that are noted in Shulchan Aruch, different cases where we don't apply the din of katlonis, and therefore not necessarily do we always apply this din nowadays. Plus, anyway, again, you have a similar machlokes to what we said before. Is it that we don't allow them to get married and maybe even force them to get divorced, or is it a number of Rishonim say that they shouldn't get married, but if they did, we're not going to force them to get divorced? The Rambam, for example, holds that way. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. And in fact, in one of his Shuvas, they asked him about this. They said, how come you have cases where a couple's not allowed to get married and we force them to get divorced? And in this case, they asked the Rambam, you write in Yad HaZaka that we don't force them to get divorced. He shouldn't marry her. It's not a good idea for him to marry her, but we don't actually force them. We don't actually prevent them from getting married. And the Rambam says, come on, you don't realize the obvious difference between something which is osur versus something which is a matter of danger. A person is allowed to take his chances, especially since we're saying over here, there's not necessarily such a rational basis behind it. After all, Rav Ashi is saying mazel goyim, where mazel by definition is something beyond our understanding. So therefore, if he wants to go ahead with it, like we had Abaye before, we can criticize him for the wisdom of his decision, but we can't actually tell him you're not allowed to marry her and you have to divorce her. And that's actually the halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch. But again, there are various other exceptions. In particular, one thing that the Rishonim discuss is if, for example, if the husband died in something more widespread, for example, in an epidemic or something, then we wouldn't apply this rule of katlonis, because then we would say it's obviously not her personal mazel. Then it's more that the whole city or the whole society or whatever is suffering from a judgment of Hashem. Anyway. Getting back to the Gemara, so Rav Ashi says mazel goyim. So, and whereas Rav Huna, we said, had said mayan goyim, that it might be something that's actually, she has some kind of disease, which then gets transmitted to him when they have relations. So the Gemara says, my benayu, what's the practical difference between these two explanations? And the answer is, ikka benayu, de eus of amis. First of all, what if her husband did not actually have relations with her? What if they only had erusin with her, and then they passed away? Well, then, obviously, doing Erusin, they haven't yet had relations, so then you can't say Mayan Goyim, because there's no physical contact with yet to be transmitted for any disease to be transmitted to him. On the other hand, Mazel Goyim would still be an issue, because what the Rosh is saying, that Hashem may have decided that she should remain poor and not have a husband to support her, that will still apply. That's one. Inami denuffel mediklo umis. Another possibility is, what if the husband passed away in an accident? What if, for example, he fell off a tree and died? So there you can't say it's mayan godim. There's nothing of mayan that would have caused that. But rather, on the other hand, if it's a matter of mazel, as Rav Ashi is saying, then that would be applicable. So again, I mean, these halachas are brought in the poskim, and in Shulchan Aruch there and Evan Ezer simon test. But again, you have these various exceptions that we mentioned, such as the idea of if the husband's passed away in an epidemic or something, plus the fact that anyway we're saying al pi halacha we don't force them to get divorced. So therefore, you don't always find this din of katlonis being really kept, because the person is allowed to, like we had before with Abaya, to a certain extent, do whatever he wants. We would advise him not to after two previous husbands, but we don't force, we don't prevent them from doing as they want to. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omelet of Yosef braid the Rava l'Rava. So Rav Yosef, who was Rava's son, asked his father Rava. He says, boy me name Rav Yosef. I asked Rav Yosef. Now there's two different Rav Yosefs over here. There's Rav Yosef plain, who's mentioned all over the place in the Gemara, the Chava of Rabba and the Rebbe of Abaye and Rava. So then there's his Talmud, who's also named Rav Yosef, who's Rav Yosef, the son of Rava. So Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, is saying, I asked the older Rav Yosef, your Rebbe, Halachic Rebbe, I asked him, is the halacha like Rebbe, that two times is enough to establish a Chazaka? But Amalei Ein, and he said to me, yes. I asked him, halacha could Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Is the halacha like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that you need to be? But Amali Ein, he says to me, yeah, also yes. So it seems achuchi achichbi. So says the younger Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rava, it seems that the older Rabbi Yosef is making fun of me. How could he say that the halacha is like both of them? Amalei, so Rava tells him, loy. No, he's not making fun of you. Stomihi, what it is there are different stam mishnayas. There are some stam mishnayas, like ours, that imply that two times is enough for a chazaka, and then you have other ones that imply that that three times are needed for a chazaka. Or poshet loch, so then what Rabbi Yosef is answering you is nisuin o malchus kirebi. When it comes to marriages, like in our Mishnah, where we talk about a woman who's been infertile in two marriages, and Malkius, as we're going to explain in the Gemara in a minute, then to Rebbe, then we say, like Rebbe, two times is enough for a chazak. On the other hand, Vestus, Vesher Amur, on the other hand, for a vest, you have a Stam Mishnah that says three times, that three times are needed to establish or to disestablish a vest. So then that goes, so then the Mishnah says three times, and similarly by Shur Amur, it says three times. So those, Kirup Shem Gamliel, those we follow Rup Shem Gamliel, because those you have a Stam Mishnah that says three times. So it's not a blanket thing, two or three, it depends on which particular dinim we're talking about. And here we have what the Ritva explains that it depends on, because of the underlying ideas, it depends what kind of din we're talking about. Are we talking about a din that involves danger to life, for example, this din of kaflonis, or something that involves serious averus, for example, this case of the malchus, versus where we're talking about something which is more lenient, and then we can say wait till three times. So, what do we mean? Nisuin hadamaran, as far as marriages, we just said the matter of the woman who was infertile, and also what we discussed in the Gemara just now, the matter of the kaflonis, where two times is enough. Malchus, where do we see as far as Malchus? Titznan. We learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Misha Lok of Ashona, if a person got Malchus for a particular Avera, and then he got Malchus again for the same Avera, so twice he's been over on that Avera, and he got Malchus, and now he does it a third time. So instead of giving him Malchus again, based in Kuntz and Oysala Kippa, then based in puts him into a Kippa, which is a very narrow cell where there's not even room enough for him to lay down. He has to stand up over there. And they give him barley to eat. Until his stomach bursts open. So we see, in other words, that there are two times where he did the same Aveda, demonstrates that he has a chazaka of being a rasha at this point, and therefore we treat him that way. So we see that two times is enough. And Vestus, where do we see that? Tosfos discusses, by the way, that it might be, in other words, that we're talking about over here, that we see he got Malchus twice, which means they already gave him Asra twice, and now we're dealing with a third time already, so then that's enough to put him in the Kippa. Vestus, where do we see, so those are two examples, so there, when it comes to marriages, and when it comes to Malchus, we see that they are two times as enough to establish a Chazak. Vestus, where do we see this, where do we see, on the other hand, with a vest, that you need three times, it's none. We learn in a Mishnah in Nidya, and again, it's a Stam Mishnah. A woman establishes a vest only once established three times, which means, in other words, so Rashi explains that the fact that she has a fixed vest has a couple of implications. First of all, it means, there's a concept called me'es la'es, that when a woman becomes nida, then as far as taharis are concerned, we have to be concerned that as much as 24 hours before it, or back to the last time that she did a bedikah, she may have actually already become tamei, and therefore any taharis that she handled or worked with became tamei. But if she has a vest, then we say, no, daya shaita, it's enough to say that she's tamei at the time when the blood came, because she already has a chazaka of having bleeding only at that time. So there the Mishnah says you need three times. So that's one naftamina. Another naftamina, Rashi points out, is that once she has a vest, if that time comes, even though she didn't do a bedikah, and so she doesn't know whether she actually bled, we still assume that she's tomei, because we have a chazaka called Orach Bismane Ba, that the period is going to come at its expected time. So the point is, in order to establish that, you need it to happen three times. Ve'in metaheres min a vest, that's shtrakamena, shalosh pam, and vice versa. A vest doesn't get canceled until it's a fixed vest, that is, a vest kavua, until it's canceled three times. Which means, in other words, so let's say, for example, let's say she had a regular thing. The Mishnah gives an example over there where let's say she had a regular thing that her period always comes on the 20th of the month. So now, 1 month, she checks on the 20th and nothing. The next month, the same thing as well. Nevertheless, she still has to be choshesh that the 20th is the day of her nida. And if she doesn't do a bedikta the third time on the 20th, we're going to have to assume that she's tameh. Only if the third time she does a bedikta, finds nothing, then we can say that vest on the 20th has been uprooted. So the point is, we see there, the Mishnah Mishnah says, three times. So therefore you see that there was an example where we follow Rav Shimon Gamliel and say that you need three times. And the Shor Amud, where do we see that example? With a Shor Amud, it's not. Ein Asher Nas Amud, actually, it's a Shalosh Pamim. An ox becomes Amud, which therefore that triggers also a couple of different dinim. It means that now if it kills another animal, then the owner pays Nezek Shalim. It also means that if it kills a person, then not only is the ox is Chayiv Nisa even to begin with, even the first time, but the owner also has to pay a Koyper. Anyway, all of that applies only if Adshi Eidubo Shalosh Pamim, only if they testify against it and based in three times. So therefore, we see that's another example where you need three times in order to establish a chazak. Tosfos points out that actually in this particular case, Rebbe wouldn't even argue, because after all, the pasuk says, im shor nagahu mitmel shilshem, and the Gemara explains in Baba Kama that mitmel shilshem means that it's already gored three times. So all it is we're saying it's not really even a matter in this particular case. Rebbe wouldn't even disagree, because obviously he can't argue with a pasuk. So therefore, this time it's three times. This is one of those cases where they would not, in fact, argue. All we're doing is we're just pointing out that there are some times when two is enough for chazaka and sometimes three. Tosfos also adds that a reason for that might be that when it comes to dinei mamonis, which after all that's what Shor Amud is all about, then we would say that everybody would agree that you need three times. Only when it comes to matters of issur v'heter, like a vest, or matters of danger, like the katlonis over there, only there would, like the mila and like the katlonis, only then would we say that you have a machlokes that's two with them. Okay. Continuing on this topic of going back now to the Mishnah, which talked about this case where the woman was infertile and where she and her husband didn't have children. So we said after 10 years, they get divorced and she marries somebody else, et cetera. Right? So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Vilona Braisa, Nisus Lurishin Velayhoyu Labanim, if this woman got married to the first husband and she didn't have any children, Lashani Velayhoyu Labanim, and then to the second one as well, so Lashlishi Loiti Nase, she should not marry a third one. Again, here we're following Rebbe and the Stam Mishnah that we said that implies that two times is enough to establish the Chazakah. And so therefore, the Shlishi Leitinase, she should not marry a third husband. Elo Lamisha Yesh Leibonim, only one who already has children, meaning who has already been Makayim Kruru. Nisus Lamisha Ein Leibonim. Now, if she marries somebody who does not have children, Tetze B'loi K'suba, then she gets divorced and she's not entitled to her K'suba. Because with the first two, we don't know for sure that it's her, we don't know for sure that it's her problem. It could equally well be, we haven't established a chazaka yet, so it could equally well be that the problem was with her husband. But once we have a third one already, then we say that it's obviously her problem. Tosfos discusses over here the question that are we talking about right away that she has to get divorced, or are we talking about that only if she was with him for another 10 years, then we're saying that she has a chazaka because of three times, and now we're saying therefore that all along it turns out that she was infertile and therefore she's not entitled to a ksuba from him, but maybe the implication would be that if they divorced before that, she would be entitled to a ksuba. Tosfos says that no, actually what it means is It's not a matter of knas because she married when she wasn't supposed to. It's rather we're talking about that the third husband didn't know of this condition of hers, and therefore it comes out to be a mekachtos. So the Gemara says iboyelahu. So now we have the question. Suppose she marries the third husband and she doesn't end up having any children with him. So now, what happened? From her first two marriages, she got a ksuba from each one of them, because at the time, you didn't know yet that she has this condition. So now, suppose that she's married to the third one, she didn't have children with him. Now it turns out, retroactively, all along, it seems that she really was infertile. Can her first two husbands sue her in Beis Din and recover the ksubas? After all, they can say, listen, when we were married to you, each of us, we didn't know that you have a condition of infertility. It could have just as well been us. Now we find out, apparently it is you, because you already have a chazaka. So therefore, now we should get, if we had known that when we married you, each of us wouldn't have married you, and therefore we want our ksuba back, because it was mekachtos. Or does she have the ability to counter-argue? No, now I became weaker. I used to be fertile, but that was your problem, that you guys were not able to father children. Now I became weaker, and now I'm older, and now, so it's only with the third husband that I have the problem. And the Gemara says, it's logical that she can tell them that, because after all, they want to show that they want the ksubas back. They're going to have to show proof that she was infertile during the 10 years with him and the 10 years with him. Okay, what about the other way around? Now what happens? She was married to three husbands and she didn't have children with any of them. Now she marries a fourth husband and she finally has children. So now, the first two, okay, she had her ksuba. She had no business with them. But the third one, we said, Taitse Shalai ksuba. So now, the third one, can she go back to the third one and say, you know what? It turns out that wasn't my fault after all. It was obviously your fault. Give me my ksuba. So that's the question. Do we say, can we tell her, on the other hand, you know what, you're better off being quiet rather than complaining about it, because the third husband can tell her, you know what, I would never have divorced you if I had known that you're fertile. Well, then what does it happen? It comes out then, therefore, that retroactively the get is bottled. Now you have a bigger problem. Now she's an Eishes Ish. And her children are going to be a mamzerim. So on the one hand, she could say, give me my ksuba. On the other hand, maybe he can counter-argue, fine, I'll give you your ksuba, but then that means that our divorce was never valid, and now it comes out that all this time you've been an Eishes Ish, and he'll create her bigger problems.
Wait a second,
Eishes Ish. Think of it. She was married to the third husband. He divorced her, thinking that she's infertile, because at this point it's already the third one. Now she marries a fourth husband. She has children. On the one hand, she can say to the third husband, you see that after all, I was able to have children, so therefore you had no basis for denying me my ksuba, because it was obviously your fault, not mine. On the other hand, what we're saying is that he could tell her, you know what? Fine, I'll give you your ksuba. But what does that mean? It means that I never would have divorced you in the first place if I'd known this. Therefore, in other words, I'm saying that get was retroactively is bottled. And then it comes out that all this time you're married to your fourth husband illegally. So therefore he would tell her, you know what, you're better off not bringing this up, because at least this way I'm willing to accept that the get was irrevocable. But if you start,
people are playing hardball.
Yeah, they're playing hardball, exactly. Well, so the answer, however, Master for a Papa. So the Papa says, one second, forget about whether the third husband himself is going to bring up that point. Shaska. So even if he is quiet. If there is such a thing, how can we be quiet? After all, we know whatever arguments are or aren't brought to Beis Din, we, the Beis Din, know that he would never have divorced her if he knew that she was fertile. Nimtza get bottle of a neir mamzerin. And again, you'd have the same problem, that the get would be retroactively bottle and her children with her fourth husband would be mamzerin. Obviously, though, the fact is that we're not doing that, because we're not saying in that case that we're responsible to speak up and do something about it. So obviously, therefore, we don't have a basis for being mevatalit, because Ella Aminin Hashtahu Debir Yasa, because on the contrary, we can say that now she became healthier. Maybe when she was married to her previous husband, she wasn't as well and was incapable of having children. And since then, her health has improved and she's able to. So therefore we can say that with his third husband, in fact, he had a valid reason for divorcing her, and therefore no ksuba. Well, therefore, so that's it. If she comes and claims the ksuba from him, it's not that he's going to say, you know what, he'll simply tell her, as we, the basin, would tell her, you know what, you have no proof that you were actually fertile when you were married to the third husband. After all, you already had a chazaka with three husbands that you weren't. It's very possible that now things have changed, and now your health has improved. So that would be the answer. So in short, the answer would be that if she married the third husband and the first two, and then it turns out she was infertile with him as well, the first two husbands don't have a basis for demanding back the ksuba, because she can say, now I became sicker. And vice versa, if she had children with the fourth one, she doesn't have a basis for demanding a ksuba from the third one, because the other way around, we can say that now she became stronger and healthier. So the matters remain as they are as far as the tzuris.
While we're paused, Misha Loka Lashana, based in Princeton, I should keep up. What is he doing exactly?
So we're talking about the Misha Loka Lashana was talking about where somebody did the same Aveira twice and got Malchus for it twice. Any Aveira that's tied Malchus. Any Aveira that's tied Malchus. Yeah, murder is something else. That's if they weren't proper Aedim or Hasra, right? Or proper Hasra, whatever.
So he could have just broken the Shabbos.
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk about that later. Let's go on. Okay. Now, the Gemara continues. Who amamina vihi amamine? What happens if you have an argument between them, which one is responsible for it? So he claims that it's her fault that she is infertile, so therefore I shouldn't have to pay her ksuba. Vihi amamine, and she counterclaims and says it's your fault. You're not yoda kechets. You don't have the ability to father children. So which one do we believe? When you have something like that, which is a personal matter between him and her, something which has to do with what happens when they have relations, where only the two of them know about it, then we trust her, and therefore we say that we can say that it is in fact his fault, therefore he would be required to give a ksuba. The time am I, now why would that be? Because because the Gemara establishes in a number of other places, in order for the husband to be able to father children, it has to be that his zera shoots like an arrow. In other words, doesn't just dribble out. Well, she will be able to feel that when they're having relations. He won't necessarily realize whether it's in fact shooting out like an arrow or whether it's kind of dribbling out. So therefore, when she says that he's not yoreh kechetz, then we have to take her at her word more than him, because he can't really be sure. Tosfos, by the way, discusses that it's actually there is some complication with this. First of all, Tosfos discusses, are we talking about where it's already after the 10 years or not? Because now, on the other hand, you have a Gemara at the end of Nedarim that says that when a woman demands a get from her husband, we don't necessarily always take her at her word, even if she says Dvarim Shebeina Labeina, because you always have the concern that she might actually now, she wants to marry somebody else. She wants out of this marriage, and she's going to use whatever excuse she can, and therefore maybe even say something untrue in order to force her husband to give her a get. So Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim discuss many ins and outs of that, about when we say that we trust her on this Yoreh Kechetz and Eino Yoreh Kechetz versus when do we not. So here it might be not so much a matter of the part of the question is, for example, whether she's doing it because she's demanding a get from him. Part of it is whether she's demanding a ksuba. There's a lot of different factors. There is, in fact, so now there's actually a sefer from the Shach. And the Shach, we know, is most famous for his pirush on Shulchan Aruch. But he also wrote a number of other sfarim. One of them actually is a sefer called Vuras Anoshim on this topic, dealing with all the ins and outs of this topic of when the woman claims that her husband does not have Vuras Anoshim, he doesn't have the ability to get Tishui, or he doesn't have the ability to be Yoreh Kechetz, or whatever. When we say, under what circumstances do we believe her and tell him you have to divorce her and give her Ksuba, versus when not? It's a complicated area in halacha, and then he wrote a sefer to discuss all the ins and outs of it. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Omer Ihu. Now, what happens if the husband says, you know what, fine. Maybe I'm not having children with you, but we don't know. You're claiming it's because of me. I'm claiming it's because of some kind of physical problem with you. So fine. I'll go marry a second wife, the Evdek Nafshoyan, and I'll check myself out that way. In other words, let's see. I'm not having any children with you. Let's see whether it's different with another wife. If I have children with another wife, then obviously it must be some kind of infertility problem of yours. So what do we do that? Rav Ami says in that case we would also require him to divorce her, to divorce the first wife and pay the ksuba. Shani Omer, because Rav Ami says, I say, any man who marries a second wife without the consent of his first wife, Yotzi v'yitin ksuba, is going to have to divorce. We're going to require him to divorce the first wife and pay her ksuba, because she never agreed when she got married to him that there could be a second wife without her permission. So therefore, he has no right to do that without her rishus.
Is that really
no, Rabba Omar, Rabba disagrees. Noisa adam kamen noshim al ishtoi, a man can marry many wives in addition to his first wife without even asking her permission. But who de'islay the mizayninhi, as long as he has enough money and enough resources to support all of them. The halacha is like Rav, although of course, so for us Ashkenazim, we have Chedim Der Ben Gershim. Even for Saudim, by the way, the halacha is like Rav. However, there were many places in the Saudish world. So nowadays, Bechlal, I mean, the vast majority of Saudim live in countries where bigamy is illegal anyway, whether in America, whether in Eretz Yisrael, etc. But even back in the old days when they lived in countries when it was allowed, it was a very common thing. They would actually write a clause into the ksuba saying that the husband agrees that he's not going to marry a second wife without permission from the first one. So then, obviously, then Rava's din wouldn't apply because then he needs permission from her based on the tnoi ksuba. Rav Ami also knows that if she agrees. Okay. Continues the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah that if during the 10 years the woman miscarried, then we said that resets the clock. So now who amar aplos v'goyeser? Now what if he's claiming you miscarried sometime during the 10 years? And he's saying, therefore, so the clock has reset. We still have 10 years from there. She says, I did not miscarry. So rather, I'm infertile to begin with. So Rav Ami says, you also, we trust her and we say that it goes according to her statement. Because if she, in fact, did miscarry, she's not going to try and make a chazok on herself that she's infertile. We would assume, says Rav Ami, that she would rather not have to say on herself, I'm infertile. So therefore, if she says, I didn't have any children, then we should take her at her word. What about hipila v'chazra v'hipila v'chazra v'hipila? What about she had multiple miscarriages during the marriage? So then, huchzakal and afalim, then she has a chazaka of that she miscarries the children. And again, you have the problem, loy zachali bonus v'mena. Maybe so fine. We see that she's not infertile, but we do see that there's evidently some kind of thing that prevents her and her husband from having children together. So we're still gonna require him to divorce her and pay her ksuba. So here it won't be like in the previous cases where you can get away without paying the ksuba because we know that it's her problem. Here we still don't know whether it's his problem or hers, but therefore we have to pay the ksuba. Now, what happens? What happens if he claims that she's only miscarried twice, so I don't have to divorce her yet, and she's saying it's already been three times, and therefore you have to divorce me and let me try to marry somebody else? Such a case happened in the Beis Medrash. When the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash said he mehema. Again, we believe her, and therefore he would be required to divorce her. Rashi says it's not even a matter of that she's demanding the divorce. We, the Beis Din, would say that he has to divorce her because he has to be mekayem piri. Again, that's according to Rashi's Shita, who says that in all these cases, we're talking about that we require them to get divorced because of piri v'ridvi. According to the Rishonim, who say, like Tosfos before, that we don't force them to get divorced even when she's completely infertile. We just tell them that he should, then it would be the same thing. We tell him that. The im isa, the le'afla, because again, if she hadn't really miscarried three times, nafshe v'nifli le'masaka, she wouldn't be trying to make herself a chazaka of having miscarriages unless it was actually true. So therefore, we take her at her word that in fact she has miscarried three times. Okay. The Mishnah says, continuing on this topic of Puruvu, ha'ish mitzuval puri v'rivya avaloi ha'isha. Only the man has a mitzvah, Puruvu, the woman does not. So therefore, that affects the halachas in the previous Mishnah and the Gemara on it. For example, we said that the cases where we require them to get divorced, for example, is we said that there was so we said actually in the Gemara we said that for example we assume other things being equal that the punishment is on him because since he has a mitzvah pruvu, then Hashem may be preventing him from having children with her, but not her because she doesn't have that same mitzvah. Rabbi Yechon and Bereka says, no, both of them are chayiv. Al shneim oimer vayibarach chayisim alakim vayim alahem alakim pruvu. After all, the mitzvah of pruvu is addressed equally to Adam and Chava, and later on to Noach and his family, so therefore it applies to both the men and the women. So the Gemara says, minohani, where do we know this, that the Chachamim are saying that it applies only to the men? Amr of Ilam, Shumar of Elazar of Shimon, Omar Kro, because the Pasuk says, after pruvu, it says, umilu asa'aretz v'chivshua, fill up the earth and conquer it. Ish dark del chabish. A man's usual way is to conquer. Ish be'en isha dark del chabish. A woman does not usually conquer. So therefore, if the Pasuk is telling us v'chiv shua in connection with pruvu, then it has to be that it's addressed to the men. So the Gemara says, adarabah v'chiv shua tarte mashma. On the contrary, the word v'chiv shua is in the plural. You, plural, should conquer it. So doesn't that mean that it's addressed to both? The answer is Amar of Nachmitz b'chav shoksev. Yes, but it's written in the Sefer Torah without the vav, and therefore we can read it as if it said b'chav shah and you singular conquer it. So therefore, it's referring only to the man, only in the singular to the man, and not to the woman. So that's one source. Rabbi Yosef Amar mehachar. Rabbi Yosef says you have a different pasuk where we see that it applies only to the men. The pasuk says Hashem tells Yaakov, Ani kel shakai krei urvei. You singular. Do pruvu, be fruitful and multiply. Well, I call him a pruvu. He, Hashem, is not saying it in the plural, a pruvu. So Tosfos says, now fine, what about by Adam and by Noach? So the answer is that was meant as a bracha rather than as a mitzvah. Which means, in other words, that when the Rabbi Yaakov Emden teaches out what the Gemara means, when we're saying to begin with, when humanity is starting out by Bria Sa'olam and later on after the Mabel, then Hashem has to address himself to both because that's after all, it takes two to have a child. But later on, when Hashem is speaking to Yaakov, then he phrases it only in the singular as a commandment, implying that now, once there already exists, and Yaakov himself already had many children, so then Hashem can address it to him exclusively and tell him that the mitzvah really only applies to you. Okay, so that's another source that it applies only to men. There is an interesting idea that I saw, and I can't remember the source of it right now, that says that a reason behind that might be, al-derech, like we said, Torah is there for darkei shalom, given that, after all, pregnancy and birth, there is a certain risk in it for the woman, so therefore Hashem is not going to require the woman to do pruvu and put herself at risk. Only the man who doesn't bear that kind of risk, then he can be obligated to do it. So since we mentioned something that Rabbi Ila says in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, so the Gemara digresses to, you need to go, it's fine. So the Gemara digresses to talk about a couple of other things that Rabbi Ila also says in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. So, v'amr Rabbi Ila mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, k'shem shem mitzvah al adam loyma davar ha-nishma, the same way as the mitzvah for a person to say something that's going to be listened to, meaning you have a mitzvah of toichacha, you see a yid doing something wrong, you have to tell him that he's doing wrong. So the same way as you have that mitzvah, kaf mitzvah al adam shaloi loyma davar she'en in nishma. The same way a person has a minhag has a mitzvah to not say something that's not going to be listened to. Meaning, if he knows the other person is not going to listen to his toichacha, then he has a mitzvah not to say. Rav Abba amachoyva. Rav Abba says not only it's a mitzvah for him not to say it, it's an obligation for him not to say it. Shenema, as the pasuk says, al toichach leitz pen yisnecha. Don't give mussar to the letz, which is a person among other things who doesn't treat anything of Torah and mitzvah seriously. He thinks everything is one big joke. So don't give him mussar pen yisnecha because he may end up hating you. Toichach lachacham v'yavecha. Instead, give toichacha to the chacham and he'll love you for it because he'll take constructive criticism. So the point is, in other words, so we see from that pasuk that when the person is not going to be receptive, then don't do it b'chalal. And Maharsha explained, the choyva is in the sense, when it says he may hate you, he may even then try to harm you for the toichacha. So therefore, it's a choyva, therefore it's an obligation on you to protect yourself by not giving him musa when you know that he's not going to be receptive to it. There was a famous story in this connection that they tell about Rabbi Yisrael, one of the earlier visionists of Rebbeim, where one time he goes and visits a local banker's house, where the banker is not one of his chassidim, is in fact one of the local maskilim, and he doesn't say a word the whole time he's there. And the guy is getting more and more curious why Rabbi Yisrael visited him and why he's not saying anything. Akitzer, when later on Rabbi Yisrael explains to him that I'm following what it says in the Gemara over here after all. I mean, how would I be fulfilling the mitzvah if I stay in my house and you stay in your house? I have to come to you and tell you. And the guy naturally is very curious. What is it you didn't want to tell me? And Rabbi Yisrael won't tell. The upshot is that finally Rabbi Yisrael tells him that there's a woman in town, a poor widow. Your bank has a mortgage on her property and they're threatening to foreclose. So I don't want to tell you about it. I don't want to tell you Musa about it because I know you're not going to listen, but that's why I came to your house. And the guy starts saying, yeah, but it's not mine. It's the bank's. And Rabbi Yisrael says, I knew I shouldn't have told you. Now you ruined my mitzvah. The point is, eventually it pricked the guy's conscience enough that he took money out of his own pocket and paid off the mortgage on behalf of this widow. So Rabbi Yisrael actually got accomplished what he needed to by not saying it in the first place. Okay, another one. A person is allowed to change something because of peace. In other words, to not tell the full truth because telling the full truth would cause an argument. As we find that after Yaakov passes away, it says that the brothers sent a message to Yosef saying, your father commanded before he passed away, telling them, Yosef, you should tell Yosef, honor son of Abraham, please forgive the terrible thing that your brother did to you. Now, Yaakov did not in fact say such a thing because he didn't, as Rashi says on the pasuk, he didn't suspect Yosef that he would try to take revenge on them. But the brothers, in order to make shalom, they pretended as though Yaakov had said that. Why they did that now, Marsha refers to something in the Medrash that says there were a couple of things that they saw Yosef do, which made them worried that maybe he still holds it against them. One was on the way back from Yaakov's funeral, they stopped off at the place where the pit where they'd thrown Yosef in many years earlier in Shechem, and he went to visit it. So they thought he's visiting it because he still remembers and he still holds it against us all these years later. Really, he had gone there in order to say the bracha of Baruch Shah Silines for Makom Hazeh. They used to all eat together, and after Yaakov passed away, then Yosef stopped that. So again, there was a reason for it, because now he'd have to sit at the head of the table, when Yaakov is not around, and he didn't want to lord it over his brothers, but they misinterpreted it as that he still has it in for them. So therefore, they sent this message in order to make shalom, but we see that they're in fact changing, they're altering the truth, because in fact, Yaakov never said any such thing. Rav Nosson Oyma Mitzvah. Again, Rav Nosson says not only are you allowed to change because of Dvar Sholem, it can even be a mitzvah to do that. Shenema, you have when Hashem sends Shmuel to anoint David, so Shmuel says, Vayema Shmuel Eich Eilich, Shmuel says, how could I go with Shama Shol Varagani with him? Shol's gonna hear about it, he's gonna kill me. And Hashem tells him, take along a calf with you and say that you're gonna bring a korban there because this is during the time when korban is so allowed outside the Beis Mikdash. And the point is, Hashem gave him a cover story which wasn't true. So therefore, we see that was again with Nei Hasholim, so that the thing is allowed. And a third example, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, Tana Gadol Hasholim. We see how great is peace. Sha'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina Boy. We see that Hashem himself changed the facts in order to create Sholim. In Parshas Vayera, when Sarah gets the news that she's going to have a baby, she says, how could that be? My master, meaning Avraham, is old. But when Hashem tells Abraham, why did Sarah laugh? He doesn't quote Sarah word for word. Instead, he says, Sarah is saying, I'm old. So we see that Hashem changed it. The Ramban actually on the Pasuk explains, it's not that Hashem is actually altering it so much as leaving out a point. Sarah had made two points. I'm old and Abraham is old. Hashem left out the part about Abraham being old and mentioned only the part where she said, I'm old. And that's also an example of Shinui. And we see that you're allowed to do such a thing with Nashalah. Okay. Square.